You are tuned into Business Sense on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.
Indeed, it is a Business Sense right here on Adventist World Radio. We are powered by SID Media. Bringing us to our Shapeshifter segment that I know you like, and you know who you'd like to hear from you as well, +27734703520. And I don't think my Shapeshifter today needs any introduction. Should I introduce you?
You can just say my name.
I can just say your name, right? Man. Yeah, I'm now
happy
Shapeshifter.
Yeah.
Ah, thank you so much for taking the time, by the way.
Yeah.
We were just talking about it's been years, man.
It's been, eh? And, sure. You know, COVID makes it like it was yesterday.
Exactly.
But actually, it's been like over 4 years since we
sure.
saw each other face to face, man.
I remember it was what? The Stewardship Committee.
Yeah.
At the TOC when I last saw you.
Yeah, man.
Yeah. It's been a long time.
It's been long.
How have you been?
Yeah, I've been all right. I've been busy.
Okay.
You know, work. Kids,
yeah.
wife,
yeah.
Church. You know, yeah. Church can get you busy, I must say.
We were talking with Monde just now, Guti. We are going towards the end of the week,
yes.
and some people would think that we are resting. Yeah. Kati, no, we are resting from that to start another
to
work.
Something else. But it's fulfilling, I must say.
Yeah,
it's
no,
really
it is.
Fulfilling.
It is.
You know?
It is
yeah. And you've been good?
No, I've been okay. I've been okay.
Yeah.
I've been okay. I must just tell my listeners, Guti, this guy arrived and he was sitting in his car and was busy with email. So just so we put it out there that he doesn't, do you ever get to rest? Let's be honest.
I do. You know, I've got a bed, I sleep.
Okay.
You know, I do rest. Sabbath is also restful because I've learned to say no.
Yeah. Oh, I see.
To invite so that I can rest and also allow my kids to have stability and just be in your local church and enjoy that, you know. So I do rest.
Okay,
you know?
All right. We'll unpack that a little bit because I do have some few questions there.
Right.
But let's go back a little bit. Where were you born and what were the conditions?
I was born in Mnambithi,
Ladysmith,
Mqulusi.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I love that place with all my heart.
Okay.
It really shaped me. A small town between Durban and Johannesburg.
Yeah.
I was born there. I went to crèche there. I went to you know, school there.
Yeah.
I left Mnambithi obviously after matric.
Okay.
But you know,
you did both primary and high school in Mnambithi?
Yes.
Okay.
I did.
Okay.
I mean, I went to primary. I went to Emcitsheni in the township of Zakheni.
Yeah.
But look, we moved a lot. You know, as a family, for reasons of poverty. You know, we didn't really have a stable place to stay. So we'll move from, you know, place to place. You know, we'll borrow people's piece of land and build a shack there and stay there.
Yeah.
You know, so it was quite interesting, you know.
Yeah.
So, you know.
So that moving, how was that stressful for you as a child? Was it, I'm just a child, doesn't really impact me?
Well, it is. There was a bit of stress balanced with fascination. Because remember, you're a child, you know. So, you know, stress, children are generally stress-free, you know, because what's in front of you is what you get used to.
Yes.
You know, I always say that, you know, children get stressed because of parents, you know, we set the standards.
Mm.
So my mom just said, this is our normal.
Yeah.
And that was our normal,
yeah.
You know. So, yeah, there was a bit of stress, obviously, because, I mean, for example, I mean, there's one place we stayed at to get to school. You had to walk and cross a railway line.
Okay.
And so that was a little bit stressful.
Yeah.
And of course, it was quite weird. You know, like when you're on a freeway and then people just pop up from nowhere, you see no houses. So I was those guys.
Yeah.
just pop up.
Yeah, pop up.
Yeah, you know. So there it was. But I have fond memories of those times because that stress, in hindsight, you know, when you are in it, you have nothing profound to say about it. But in hindsight, like, geez, that thing actually contributed to a number of things.
Yes.
While in it, you just have no idea that this thing will work out for good. Yeah.
Yeah, hindsight. Politicians love that word, with the benefit of hindsight. For people who might not know Imnambiti per se, socioeconomically, what does it look like?
Okay, let me give you a few examples, then you'll figure it out, right? Yeah. We don't have a cinema in Mnambiti, which means we are focused people. Just kidding. Mnambiti, look, Mnambiti has evolved. When I was younger, it really, you know, opportunities were in bigger cities. Mm. So they'll be in Durban, in Maritzburg, in Johannesburg, and you wouldn't have access to information, you know, because there was no real email there, you know. So people who have access to information would be in the big cities. Mm. So even if you had access to information, whether it's for bursaries or for school and all those things, to then access those, you need to get into a taxi and actually go to the cities.
Yeah.
Fast forward to now, I think it has evolved. I mean, when you go there, you know, young people are running businesses. Young people have access to information. They move between cities and able to come back. You know, so it's buzzing. And I think one of the things that it was quite a great town for Transnet transit, you know, because we've got, you know, Sportnet days, you know.
Yeah.
But obviously, because we didn't take care of our rail as a country, you know, that also killed it a bit. But there's a lot of factories in Mnambiti, you know. Some are closed, but, you know, it was kind of that kind of, but small town.
Small town, but
lovely.
Definitely. That's really interesting. Now, this access to facilities, obviously, like you're saying, you have to go to town for information or even to access, I suppose, technological infrastructure to be able to do that. How tough was it for you?
What was interesting. So my mother was, she worked for a lawyer.
Mm.
And she was making tea there and doing filing, you know. So what she'd do, you know, my mom, I mean, she wasn't extremely educated. I think she ended in less than matric, but she could see. I mean, she saw that the lawyer was reading newspapers all the time.
Mm.
So when the newspapers, was done reading newspapers, she'll then bring them home.
Yeah.
It's like, and she'll just say that, hey, abantu bafundile, they read, you know, and then I'll have to read these newspapers. And that's where, you know, we'll find information. You know, that was one way of getting access. The other way of getting access was obviously where we stayed. I remember when I was in high school, we were staying in that place that like Kwamtanti. Now it looks totally different. It's beautiful. People have built nice houses. And, you know, when I tell a story how it looked, you know, people think, oh, how old are you? But We because we didn't have enough money for public transport, we'd have to wait for. So there was a person who had a taxi there. So it, you know, taxis, once they're done, they'll come back like at 5 p.m., et cetera, et cetera. So we'd have to wait in town.
Sure.
Because that taxi is going to come back. So he wasn't going to charge us, you know, to go back there. So we have to wait in town. And obviously, we'll go back with my mother back home with that taxi.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes there'll be some little money, and then we'll catch a bus.
Yeah.
But staying in town until 5 meant that we sat in the library. So I had to obviously help my sisters with their homework, and then I have to read or do something. There was also access to information, just by being there. You know, being in that library, so that also helped.
That's really interesting. I want us to then get into, I suppose, your career a little bit. But before we get into that, small town, less infrastructure, you have to go out to get things and all that. Did it not discourage you in terms of what you perhaps wanted to become when you grow up?
No, you know what was helpful. It was that there were a few people who were older than us. You know, I think, and it's like church folks, you know, Adventist folks. I mean, I can think of, there's a number of them. I mean, the three that always come to mind is Ntokozo Sbeko. I mean, she's a doctor now here. I think there was Buhle Hlatshwayo. There was Khulekani. No. So these are people who went to universities.
Yeah.
And then when they come back during holidays,
yeah,
I'll spend time with them and just, you know, So what happens
in
these big cities? And then they'll bring you forms, etc.
Yes.
So just because someone who looks like me was able to leave town and come back with different stories. There was another way of accessing those. And I remember, I mean, when I ended up at Wits, it was Ntokozo who was at Wits who brought back forms.
Okay.
You know.
Okay.
So that was my infrastructure.
Oh wow, that's nice. Now just on that, how important is that? I'm asking because there could be other young people perhaps who are struggling with the same thing. And and I'm asking because there could be I suppose youth and dialects, they would call it. How important is it to go back and just, even if it's just to give information, just constantly go back? Because I think once we are here, we get consumed by the cities and we don't remember where we come from.
Yeah.
Even if on a mind, but just that little form to just give it back to some kid somewhere in Limpopo, Mnambithi, whatever the case might be.
No, it's very important. And I think even the names I've just mentioned, you know, I think we're all here in Johannesburg, most of us.
Yeah.
And we are deliberate about, okay, we need to organize a Sabbath where we actually go back home.
Lovely.
And the whole day we just talk about everything. We talk. I mean, the last time we were there, we do it once a year.
Yeah.
So we actually need to do one soon.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, we it was like, I think it was in September. You know, I'd teach something on personal finance, and then guys were talking about careers and business and how to access this, how to access that, and you know, and of course, you know, there'll be people who put a challenge to us and say, "So what are you going to do to help the guys here?" You know, and that is very important. You know, it's very important because that's what was done for us.
You
know, but obviously it's a better time because, you know, now people have access to information.
Yeah.
So it's not as difficult, but it's still important to go back.
Still very important to go back. All right, your career. Where did you start? I'm sure that first job must have been really interesting.
So obviously after I completed my BAC, Bachelor of Accountancy, which is like equivalent to BCom honors or CTA, whatever they call it these days, at Wits, I then went to Deloitte to do my articles. Maybe an interesting thing about how I ended up at Deloitte, you know, so I'm one of those people, I like dreaming and imagining things, you know, and I remember when university with my friends, we'll always say, we had this thing of this time next year. So we say this time next year, this is what will happen. We're just dreaming.
Yeah.
And then we'll debate the whole year, how are we going to get there? So one thing, I mean, how I ended up at Wits, for example, was that, and I have to tell you the story because it stays fresh in my head. Obviously, we were quite poor. I mean, I got to matric. My mom was saying, this is as far as I could take you, but education is important. So from the newspapers she was bringing, obviously you'll see that, okay, there's bursaries. So we'll apply and you know, we'll take some of the stamps from her office that we're not used, and then we'll apply. And then when she does mailing for the lawyer, and then she'll also send my thing. And I remember, and I had kept on getting rejections, you know, getting rejections. And back then, obviously, too, we had no cell phones. So you needed money to go and call in the telecom, you know, the telecom phone, you know. So one Sunday afternoon, we were church practicing. I used to love singing. I still love singing, but, you know, now
what
I talk more
than group,
I
the group, by the way? I had to throw in it there.
No. Some groups, obviously, I left because of distance.
Yeah.
But we had a tragedy of my friend Alex, you know, during that really, so that was, that hit me quite hard.
Yeah.
But maybe back to this one. So we finished practicing and there was one place I had not followed up, which was Saika. I had applied to get a bursary. They had something called CA's Eden Trust back then. So I borrowed a 1 rand from a friend of mine, Nebo. I'm going to 1 rand, but I just want to make a phone call.
Yeah.
That was the most important phone call because they tell me that they've been trying to find me, but they couldn't know where to find me. And they've given me a bursary.
Sure.
And, you know, what now?
Sure.
Luckily, I had already applied at Wits, but
you
know. So that really, really worked for me. But fast forward to the issue of the careers. So obviously, I had the bursary from Saika. 2 years in, I had already decided that, you know, I'd love to do articles at Deloitte.
Okay.
So then wrote to Deloitte.
Yeah, yeah.
And said, guys, I know I'm in second year.
Yeah.
I've got third year and fourth year to finish.
Yeah, yeah.
But when I finish, I want to do articles with you guys.
Yes.
You know? So they came back and said, okay, fine, we'll recruit you for articles. It's a bit early, but we're also going to give you a bursary.
Ooh.
So now I had two bursaries.
That's lovely.
So then I called Saika. I said, guys, I now have this bursary. So maybe this portion you can find someone else because someone else needs a bursary.
Might need it,
So I ended up at Deloitte, did articles there. Finished my articles, went to Sebenza Forwarding and Shipping. It was clearing and forwarding, you know, international logistics. Mm. It was a company that was owned by Bidvest, 45%, and 55% by Makana Investment Corporation, which is an investment wing of the former political prisoners.
Yeah,
you know, when they get out of prison, they said, okay, let's invest. They said. Yeah. So they owned it. Again, that was, you know, I didn't apply for the job. Mm. I was doing an audit there and the FD liked the way I approached things and wanted me to actually stop my articles and come work there. It doesn't work like that. So then we did a deal with Deloitte to say, Deloitte must second me there for 3 months.
Okay.
And then Deloitte can make money out of it.
Ooh.
And then it must count towards my articles. So I had to write to Saika and say, can that work out?
Yeah, you know.
Then I was working out. So then in January, I just joined them of 2009 and I was their financial manager. Then after that, I went to Otis Elevators.
Yeah.
Didn't like it quite well there. I mean, I stayed there for 10 months.
So. I mean, Bonang is from there. What do you mean you don't like it?
No. So this is after his time.
Oh, okay.
So this is after stuff. So it was a little bit, I stayed there for 10 months and then I made another phone call and then I was back as CFO of the holding company, so the investment company of the former political prison. So I stayed there as a CFO for a while and then I went back to Sebenza as FD and then became MD. And then while I was MD, we then, you know, agreed to combine the Bidvest company that competed with us. And then now I'm at Bidvest International Logistics.
There you go. Oh, yeah. That seems very interesting. Yeah. From what I'm hearing a lot of taking initiative and not waiting for things to come, perhaps at the beginning of your career, right? Was that writing to Deloitte on its own, perhaps one would not have ordinarily thought about it, you know, and that shows initiative on your part. I suppose that was also a little bit of pressure on you because they now needed to watch whatever you're doing at school and how you're performing and all that. But maybe it was good pressure because then it meant you needed to work, you know, that there's at least something that's going to be coming out of this. Initiative, how important is it for young people?
I think it's very important. You know, one of the things that I learned was that nobody owes me anything.
Love that.
Nobody owes me anything. But having said that, you know, we have a saying, I don't know how to translate these things in English. Umuntu ngumuntu ngabantu.
Yeah.
You know, I am because you are.
Yeah.
While nobody owes you, there's enough people with resources that you can tap to.
Yeah.
But those are not just going to come to you.
Mm-hmm.
You actually have to go to those resources. Mm-hmm. You have to take an initiative because it is your life. It is your career. Mm-hmm. And you must reach out. Mm-hmm. The worst thing that can happen, people will say no.
Mm-hmm.
But what if they say yes?
Mm-hmm.
You'll never find out if you don't reach out.
That's really been
my approach. But it's also important to first create the scenario in your head, what success looks like.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
so that when you're reaching out to people, you've already thought about what you want to get out of it in a very concise manner.
Yeah.
You know, because people have limited time to listen to you, so you have to really rehearse it in your head and then just hit it, and then it will make sense.
Yeah.
But also what's also important is, you know, when you're taking initiative, also understand what are the priorities of the people you are trying to reach out to and speak the language that makes sense to them, that they can recognize, that they can align to. Not everybody, your needs are not always aligned to what everyone is focusing on. So you have to understand, you know, this one is focusing on this. They are excited about developing people and what kind of people do I fit the criteria and that's who I reach out to.
Oh, lovely. Numbers. Do you love numbers? What drew you to numbers?
Wow. I'll be honest, I didn't set out to just become a chartered accountant. In fact, I didn't even know what was a chartered accountant, you know. So I didn't, I, I, I love numbers, but not from a nerdy kind of approach, you know. I love numbers because they tell a story, right? And I love stories, and I can tell stories whether using numbers or symbols or words. So they come from that angle, you know. I didn't set out to be a chartered accountant. I mean, at first, I wanted to be, funny enough, I wanted to be a doctor.
Okay.
Yes. I wanted to be a doctor, but then, you know, my mother was quite observant. And then one time I'm cooking, and then I think I was cooking pub or something. And I'm busy singing, I'm getting distracted. And then I left the yinumpini in English. Hey, Englishman.
Yeah, goes away. Now I come to this Steve Ganga.
You know, so I leave the utensils that you used to stir.
To stir for pub.
You know, I leave it there. And then my mom is observing me. And then she made a comment. Said, yeah, you want to be a doctor, but you don't pay attention to things. You leave an injection in someone. So that's how that career ended, I must tell you.
Okay.
You know?
Thank you too,
and then
mom.
We had to find something. As I say, you know, accounting tells a story.
Yeah.
And I love telling stories, you know. So it's from that angle. It's not really about numbers. It could have been anything, you know, if it tells a story, if it's relevant in every industry, that's where I'd be.
Why do you think people fear numbers?
I think people fear numbers because of how they are introduced to numbers, because of how they are taught, because of the stigma around numbers. You know, you already, when they tell you about numbers, they almost tell you that it's for clever people. It's for, but if you think about it, all of us work with numbers all the time. We might not call them numbers, you know, but it's numbers, you know. You know, you earning your money and making sure that you can afford your life. That's numbers. You know, deciding when to wake up. It's numbers. Managing your day and allocating time and this. That's numbers. Numbers are all over. They're all around us, you know. So, but I just think the way they are introduced to us, and also the kind of teachers, you know, when you found a right teacher. I mean, I remember when we were at varsity, geez, we struggled with this thing, financial accounting. It was tough. It was tough, you know. But UJ, which was called Rao back then, they had better notes. You know, their auditing notes and their accounting notes were better than the vet's notes.
Yeah.
Because I used those notes, it started to make sense. So sometimes it's just the way something is presented and taught that then becomes intimidating.
I mean, I've got a lot of young people that struggled with maths and accounting and all those sort of stuff. And anything with numbers in general becomes a little bit intimidating, right? And I think I love the point around that it's how it's presented that can shift and change the way people see numbers. And it almost sounds like a dichotomy when you're saying numbers tell a story. People are like, no, it's just 1 + 1. How does that tell a story? I suppose it's your job to make that make sense. What motivates you?
What motivates me? I think when I can make an impact, that motivates me. You know, when I can see a before and after picture.
Okay.
That motivates me.
Okay.
You know, I like things that are that can be fixed. I like things that can be simplified. You know, I like those. I like when I'm done doing something, things then look different. Yeah. Even in people where someone was confused about something, and then because I've engaged with them, then the pin drops. I love that. So I look for opportunities for that. You know, so example, I mean, I could have been anything. I could have been a doctor, but I wouldn't have worked in a private hospital because everything
public.
Works. You go in public and in the chaos,
nothing
and then
works,
you then it can work, but in the chaos, I love then saying, it looked like this before, now it looks like that stuff motivates me. And I do that even with my children. You know, I love when they are stuck and struggling with something, but by the time we are done, you know, it's so simple. I like that.
Now it makes sense to them and they can see that.
Some
of the challenges you've faced so far in your career?
Many challenges. The first challenge, for example, was language.
Okay.
You know, forget the jargon of accounting, you know, just the English, you know, that was quite a difficult thing. I mean, I grew up just speaking Zulu,
yeah.
and And in my Zulu, we were not discussing embedded derivatives and all these funny things that are there. So forget the jargon, just the English of it. Yeah. So that was a little bit of a challenge, but I overcame it by reading quite a lot. I read quite a lot, and I didn't start with difficult things. You know, I started reading comics.
Okay.
Just to improve. I mean, Asterix and Obelix. That was my comic thing.
Yeah.
And that then improved my communication. Mm. The other thing that was a challenge for me was do I call it culture or my socialization? So you know, we grow up believing that you must be humble and you must just work hard. Mm. People will notice and then promote you.
Yeah.
But in the workplace, people are not out there looking to notice you.
Yeah.
You have to stand out.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And you know, my upbringing was saying, no, when you try to put yourself in people's faces, it's a bit desperate, it's a bit too much.
Mm.
But then I noticed when we're at Deloitte that, you know, it was the guys who during lunches and things, they were engaging with the partners who then got the better jobs.
Got noticed.
And it wasn't because it's unfair, it's because the partner is not looking for everyone, but whoever stands out, then they notice the person. Then I started learning that you know, put yourself out there. So that was a bit of a challenge. I think the other challenge in my career has been, you know, this country. If you think about the economy, it is an economy that is in other people's hands.
Yeah.
And sometimes when you go to clients, if they decide they're just going to speak Afrikaans while you're sitting in the room, because they're in charge of it.
Yep.
That was a challenge.
Yeah.
Now you needed to learn to be assertive and say, guys, I'm also in the room. Can you speak the language that you understand? I'm here to do it without necessarily offending the client, you know, and then you gain respect there.
Yeah.
But it wasn't an easy thing to do.
Yeah.
You know, I had to learn that.
Yeah.
So those were some of the challenges. Later on, my challenge was that, you know, sometimes you'll be in the room and you are the manager, you're the one in charge.
Yeah.
But everyone around you is old enough to be your father or your mother. Now I have to balance.
Yes, yes.
Knowing that I can't call them by their name.
Yeah.
But also have authority.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
That was a challenge.
Yeah.
But I've learned that to have authority doesn't mean you have to be rude.
Mm.
You know, you can still call Mamubani, Babubani, and still get most out of them.
Yeah.
I had to learn that.
Yeah.
You know. So that was a challenge at first.
The imposter syndrome, do you think it's a thing?
It is a thing.
Mm.
It is a thing. I think and I think it becomes a thing because when you go to the next level, you don't know everything.
Mm.
One.
Yeah.
Number two, you also know that there are others around you who always think they can do the job.
Yeah. Better than
So you have to prove yourself, right? So it's always there. But it's funny thing is that it's the imposter syndrome and fear is part of courage.
Mm.
You know, when you are courageous, you are also going to have an element of fear so that it keeps you taking what you are doing seriously.
Mm.
So it's not such a bad thing.
Mm.
It's really not such a bad thing because then you don't take things for granted.
Mm.
But it's a real thing. It's there.
It's a real thing. Eh?
It's there.
And you specifically, how have you overcome it?
How I've overcome it was to also accept that I'm not expected to know everything.
Even at that level. Yeah.
What I should be able to do is to surround myself with people who know better than me, but be able to have systems of thinking and systems of managing that can pull these people together and get an outcome. That is part of leading. You don't have to know everything, but know how to assess everything and measure it. Know what's important.
Yeah.
And that has freed me up.
Yeah.
You know, I surround myself with experts, but and it's also understanding that there are different paths to progression in a career. Some people are gonna be very technical. Some of us are gonna be all-rounded, being able to pull things together, and that is a valuable skill. You know, just because someone is technical, it doesn't mean that they know how to pull all the puzzles together and build a picture.
Yeah.
That is a valuable skill,
yeah.
and you must be proud of that.
Yeah.
But what's important is knowing What are the basic things? What are the critical elements of each? When you've understood that, then you're okay. So you have to know everything.
What type of a leader would you say you are? I know there's theoretical, things we've been taught about differently, charismatic and what. But at a very basic level, what type of leader do you think you are?
Look, I think I'm a. I don't have fancy words for it, but I'm probably a situational leader.
Okay,
you know, I lead people differently based on what their strengths are. Right. So I lead more using strengths of people. I don't focus too much on people's weaknesses, except for the weaknesses that threaten their strengths. Okay. Right. Okay. So I do that. I'm also a kind of leader that, I believe in removing obstacles so that people can perform better. Right. So I'm that kind of a leader. I'm also a leader that sympathizes with people because I've been poor. I've been whatever. So I can understand. So I listen more to people so that I can understand where they are coming from, what is the context. So I'm that kind of leader. I mean, I don't have a word for it. I don't do fancy things.
Yeah, no, situational leadership is actually a term.
Oh, is it?
I'm told.
Okay. Then
typical day, what time do you wake up? What time do you go to bed? What happens in between?
So I wake up at 10 to 5.
Okay.
Religiously.
Religiously,
except on Sabbath.
Yes, there you sleep.
there I sleep until 7.
Yeah,
unless like I have to preach somewhere, etc. So I wake up at ten to 5.
Yeah,
and then it takes me about 15 minutes to get ready for some exercise.
Okay,
so I value time. I think time is the most precious commodity. So I always create convenience around me. So I know that I must exercise, but I just think driving to the gym takes up so much time, and time is important.
Yeah.
So I've set up a little gym somewhere in the house. So I'll then wake up, as it takes me 15 minutes to get ready for that gym.
Listen, we were talking the other day on the other show, and I was saying to people, it's very odd for any person when they wake up. Same time, kahlele ingubo. Like, I think you need some time to just relax, tell your mind, no, man, we are waking up right now. Yes, I think I was wrong. Like, people don't get it, but I think I get it.
It works, man. You can just
get out and kahlele ingubo.
Some people can't do that. Right?
Yeah, it's weird, though.
But I can't do that. So I'd wake up and then I'd go to the gym.
Yeah.
I only spend like 40 minutes there. Okay. By the way, when I gym, I play a cappella Adventist music. I play No Limits.
Okay.
Everybody.
Okay.
That's the stuff that I play, and I gym to that. Because then I'm trying to also have worship while I'm exercising.
At the same time,
and then, of course, after that, obviously, I'll shower.
Mm.
And then, obviously, the kids are, the helper is helping to prepare, the wife is helping to prepare, etc. And then I have to drop off kids. After dropping off kids, and again, that's a routine.
Yeah,
my kids don't wait. You don't drop them and go. You drop them, walk with them, talk to them. The eldest one just leaves you afterwards.
Yeah.
The young one, we debate whether I must walk him to his class or we can, So I do that. So I leave enough time for that. And then, of course, then it's the office. I'll check mails.
What time do you get to the office?
If schools are closed, I get to the office at 6:30. If schools are not closed, I get to the office at 7:30.
7:30. Okay.
Yeah. And then I'll get there and I try to not have meetings until 9. So that I can plan my day. I can look at my emails and check what has just become a critical thing.
Yeah.
And then I start having a couple of meetings.
Mm.
I always compete in saying, let's see how much of my planned to-do list I'll get through versus things that just pop up. So I'll do that. And then I've got various dashboards that tell me what's happening in each region, whether it's the Eastern Cape, the Western Cape, KZN, etc.
Yeah.
How's the invoicing going?
Mm.
How's the business? Are there any pressing issues? I check what clients are happy with us and which clients are complaining and who do I need to talk to. If they are happy with us, then I must encourage the guys.
Yeah.
Keep doing what you're doing. Yes. This is what you're actually doing very well, etc. And then, and then it's meetings, it's work, it's analysis, it's phone calls, and whatever comes in between. And then the day then ends at 5.
Okay.
Then I'll get home. Obviously, getting home you get home and it's hello.
Mm.
Find out how everybody's day is. Have worship, and then sit a bit with the wife, see how the day was, and then now it's homework time with the kids. Mm. And then they do their homework, and then you send them off, and then I then go back to just do 2 hours of work, catching up with work, etc.
Yeah.
When I'm commuting, I do listen to, I don't listen to radio a lot.
Okay.
I listen to audio books.
Okay.
Or I'll listen to some talk radio or something. But it's mostly audio books.
Audiobooks.
Or I don't play radio. I just sit and think.
And think,
yeah.
Okay. What time do you go to sleep then?
Oh, it depends, right?
Okay.
The aim is to go to sleep at 10.
Okay.
But sometimes you end up sleeping at 11. You know, but 10 is the time to go to sleep.
That's not bad. I have a friend who actually sleeps around 12 o'clock. Again, he's the MD. He's been shipped now, sorry to use that word, but to Swaziland.
Yeah.
And he was telling me he doesn't see the kids. 3 o'clock already. At most he's up 3 o'clock. Depending on what's pressing, he'll obviously get a call from the chairman already by 4 a.m.
It happens.
Yeah,
that happens.
That's where I was going to. Do you get those as well? Calls in the early mornings.
In June, for example, for a couple of days, I'd be in the office, leave the office at 3:30 in the morning. And still get back to the office at 7:30, simply because of what you are dealing with at that time.
Yeah.
July, it's our financial year end, so it's there's always these different pressures. Mm. But I do try my best to make sure that I can be with the family and be visible.
Yeah.
But I also travel a lot. This week I've been in Durban, so it was quite good that this is on Thursday because I returned to Durban from Durban last night.
Yeah.
But then again, it's technology helps because then you can video call, catch up with the madam, catch up with the kids.
Yes.
Because I don't believe there's anything called work-life balance.
Okay.
I think I've given up on that.
Mm.
But what I go with is work-life integration.
Bringing the two together.
Yeah, the two together.
Yeah.
So I'll sit in my study and I've created chairs for my kids to come and sit and do their reading and do their homework. Mm. So we are together, And kids sometimes just need 20 minutes and 20 minutes feels like 4 hours.
Yeah.
Can integrate that into your life.
That's lovely. Let's talk about money now. What's your relationship with money? How would you characterize it? And I know I'm asking someone who does really quite a lot of personal finance talks, but
how much time do you have?
But in young eyes, elapi.
No, I is elapi.
Yeah,
I is elapi. My relationship with money at the moment is very healthy.
Okay,
it's very healthy, but it has not always been healthy.
Yeah.
But it's very healthy. I know how much I spend.
Mm.
I know what it takes to, generate the money. Mm. I respect that, and also I don't get tricked by marketers and all of that.
Okay.
But it was a journey to get there. I always thought that I'm going to be a chartered accountant. Surely I know how to handle money. Boy, was I wrong.
What were some of those mistakes?
My goodness. I mean, for example, one thing that I've learned is that. Not all money problems are problems of money.
Okay, they're created elsewhere.
They are problems of how we think,
problems
of our emotions and things like that.
Mm.
And that really got me, I as many mistakes I've been, I've been evicted because I didn't pay my rent.
Yeah, yeah.
I've had to squat with people, put all my clothes and things in the garage for a while until I get back on my feet. I've done funny things. I've cancelled my insurance. I remember cancelling my car insurance.
Yeah,
and then a week later, I had an accident. It's like,
It always happens like that, right?
I've been through all of that. Yeah. I've bought a car that I didn't afford, simply because they appealed to my ego and yes. It just felt good. So all the mistakes that people make, I've made all of them.
Yeah,
you know. So when I start teaching on personal finance, I can empathize. Is that the word? Mm. You know. So I don't dismiss people. I'm not theoretical because I really understand what it means to be broke and also what it means to try and rise above it.
Yeah. And what do you kids? What do you teach to your kids about money?
So look, my kids, what I teach them about money is that money is earned.
Yeah.
You know. So I teach them the different ways people earn money. I teach them about patience. You know, even when I can afford to get them something, I then work with them and say, it's going to take us 2 months to get there. You know, you've got your allowance. How much are you going to contribute to it? Let's have a target. I'm teaching them that, you know, that, you know, some things take time. I do teach them then what to do with the money that has been earned. So I use their pocket money to teach them those lessons, teach them about shopping, teach them about saving, teach them about, you know, and have goals and they look forward to, you know. So, for example, we put money aside the whole year so that when it gets to December or January and we are on holiday, then they can spend some of their money. So, yes, we'll make sure that there's breakfast because it's a... You get breakfast in a hotel and there's lunch, but snacks in between. You've been saving for that.
You
see a toy.
Yeah.
You've been. So I teach them that, you know, but obviously as they grow, it's going to get even better.
Yeah. You know, certainly. We've got about 3 minutes. But what I wanted to touch on, in this 3 minutes is one, your work that you do with Stasa as well.
Yeah. You know, Stasa has been, It's an old organization that has really changed a lot of lives, and they've just come up with a new strategy that really focuses on impact. You know, how do we make sure that we have an impact beyond just conferences and church? And it focuses on four pillars. You know, there is the business pillar, which really focuses on how can we you know, contribute to business people, but also then activate them to also contribute to the mission of Stasa and society at large, and also have business people who reflect the morals and the integrity that is needed for business, and how to make sure that they grow, they get access to opportunities. And then it focuses on professionals. That's what I'm in charge of, focusing on professionals. How do we make sure that professionals thrive in their careers? How do we make sure that at different stages of being professionals, how can we teach them to make sure that they can get to the next level, but also have them also contribute to society.
Yeah.
So we've got a couple of programs that we've put in place, whether it's seminars, whether it's connecting them to resources, teaching them about financial management, teaching them about how to also become entrepreneurs, because eventually professionals want to be entrepreneurs, and also how to grow in their career and make an impact. And then there's also students, to make sure that how do we contribute to students, but also have them contribute to us. Because remember, students are more current than us. What I know about accounting is changing in the university. How do you make sure that we all benefit from that? And then there's the think tank, which is really about the research. It's quite exciting because it says that we don't just shoot in the dark. We do some research so that whatever we do has impact. We identify where the needs are. We identify where the trends are. And so we use research to actually influence what we do. So it's quite an exciting time for Stasa. And I think it will make a serious impact in the lives of Stasa members, but in the lives of society at large.
No, that's certainly exciting. I think without overshooting it, but we definitely would like to be involved in that as well, right?
Yes.
As a program and also as a radio station. What advice would you give to your younger self?
I think what I'll give to my younger self is there's too many advice, right? So the first advice really is to say that you are responsible for your own development and learning, right? That's one thing. You know, take the responsibility and be proactive around that. The second thing that I will really give myself is to say, you know, invest in your health. And it sounds like a funny thing, right?
Yeah.
But remember that when you are healthy, both mentally or physically, you can actually achieve more. And I I've seen that. I'm turning 40 now, and I can see that there are some things I didn't do very well in terms of my eating and exercise, and I'm starting to slow down. I think that's very important. What I also put to myself as a young person is to say that, you know, an average person by the time they are 65, they would have watched 9 years of TV. 9 years. You know, so I would challenge myself to say, why don't you shave off some of the time so that you spend more time learning, connecting, and learning to earn and increase your earning capacity. You know, when you are young, you can do a lot of things and experiment and make mistakes.
Yeah.
The consequences are less dire than when you are older, because there's a lot that is at stake. So those are some of the things that I could say to my younger self.
To your younger self. Yeah. Where are we going 10 years from now?
Yo, I'll be 50 10 years from now. That's very scary.
That's very scary.
It's very scary. Look. One thing that's clear is that the world is evolving faster than it did in the past.
Yeah.
So for me, 10 years from now, at least the one thing I wanna be able to do is to have enough skills to remain relevant.
Mm.
So that's gonna be very important to me, that I remain relevant even 10 years from now. That's important to me. I do see myself impacting more people, whether in the businesses that I manage or in society. I really see myself doing that.
Yeah.
I really would love to see myself, being able to create an extra day each week where I can really spend more time away from the business of work and actually go and make an impact that can ripple throughout the country and throughout Africa. Because I think there's a lot that talented people, skilled people can do, but we're all too busy. And I wanna, I think I wanna work enough to buy myself some time to actually make an impact.
Yeah.
You know, that's where I see myself. And of course, I see myself absolutely wealthy.
Wealthy. I love that. What did you do differently then?
In terms of what?
Just generally, what is the one thing you think, if I did it differently?
You know, I think if I tried challenging the status quo all the time, I would have come up with more innovation and even some invention. Sometimes we doubt ourselves. We think of great ideas and we think these ideas are too crazy. You know, if I actually took some of the ideas and say I'm going to try them, I think I would have found something that works.
You'd have found something that works. Before my last question, what advice, anything you could say to listeners, perhaps people looking up at you, young people who, of course, would like to be where you are in the next coming few years, what advice would you give to them?
It's a simple, not profound advice. When I look back at how I've progressed in my professional life and how others who've progressed faster than me progress, one thing that's very clear is that, you know, and we're talking to professionals now and people who work, you know, we can say something about business people.
Yeah.
But we don't promote people for doing what we pay them to do. People are taken to the next level when they are already operating in that next level. Makes it easier. And how I've done it is that, you know, if I've got work to do and I'm a financial manager, I start learning and understanding what the people in the next level do.
Yes.
And then I create space.
Yeah.
I automate things. I create inefficiencies so that I can create 2 hours a day where I can start volunteering for the next level. And then find a sponsor who keeps on broadcasting that I'm already operating there.
Yeah.
And that's how doors have opened.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'd say do a lot of that.
Yeah.
Create space
to
learn what's in the next level and start volunteering in the next level. But also find mentors and find sponsors.
Yeah.
And there's no one person who knows everything. So find a mentor for the intellectual, find a mentor for the spiritual, find a mentor, you know, and have as many mentors as possible and be responsible for managing that mentorship relationship.
Yeah.
Because remember, you're the one who wants to go to the next level.
Yeah.
They've already arrived. So be more hungry and be proactive.
And be proactive as well. Ever since I've known you, kind of less talk. Asikhulume ngendaba yesigqoko just as we close. Isigqoko lesi. Is it a thing?
It's part of it. Sengnempandla manje, you know.
Okay.
I cover that, but the other I just like it. It's like
okay.
It's just kind of a trademark,
yeah,
you know. I'm
yeah.
not a flamboyant person, but at least I've got something.
It's going
you know. It's just No. I love
you
these
just
heads.
Love his dog.
I just love these.
Thank
heads.
You so much, man. It's been great.
Thank you for having me. Like time flies.
Time flies, eh?
I just feel like we didn't.
Look, we still need a lot. We still need a lot of time, and my producers are listening, but we still need a lot of time to unpack. As you know, I haven't even covered everything that we were supposed to speak about, but I really want to say thank you for your time and sharing and opening up with us. Really appreciate your time.
Yeah.
There you go. It was Ukolani Sithole, of course, our shapeshifter for today, and telling us a little bit about what he does. How did he even get to where he is? And, you know, I love that. Learn what the next level is doing so that you also can, you know, create time and space so that you can learn for that. We'll definitely be podcasting this conversation. It will be available on our app. So go to your Play Store, iOS, whatever other platform that you use so that you can be able to download it. But from me and the rest of the team, thank you so much for joining us this evening. We really appreciate it. It was the last installment of Business Sense because tomorrow between 6 and 8 p.m. it is, let me try and remember. No, I haven't forgotten. It's Bible Perspective coming up with Zanele Zama between that time. But until next time, may God bless you and keep you. May he cause his countenance to so shine upon you and give you peace. Till we meet next time. Good night.
You are tuned into Business Sense on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.